So, in addition to paper records, what's really important is really talking to people. And that's where a lot of your family history is going to be found. So things like oral histories, or, you know, what I always say to people, like month-old parties, weddings, funerals, any kind of family gathering, go corner that relative that you know knows stuff. And even if it's just in passing, like, write it down, because that's the information you're really not going to find in an archive or online. And so I'm just really thrilled today to have Rochelle here from StoryCorps, because their specialty is helping people to interview family members and friends and then being able to record that. In Chinese families, because a lot of them are really fractured, especially due to the history of migration, sometimes the relationships aren't what they are, and also because of the history of paper sons and that whole episode, a lot of people are afraid. They're afraid and reluctant to talk about that. I know my own mother said, oh, you don't want to talk about that, all right? And we've all heard that before. So Rochelle's going to give us some pearls of wisdom. So thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rochelle. I am from StoryCorps. This is my first time ever presenting not only at a conference, but also about my Chinese identities. So bear with me. I'm a little bit nervous, but let's dive right in. All right. So I am a national facilitator at StoryCorps. So what that means is that my job is to travel around the country, and I have the absolute privilege of being able to not only listen to these conversations, but also record conversations between two people that know each other and really care about each other. So first, a little bit about me. I was born and raised in San Francisco, and for the first half of my childhood, I was raised in a largely Chinese community. And then when I was 9 years old, I moved to a predominantly white part of town. And so that began a very long journey of shame and denial of my Chinese heritage. And it's only really in the past year, really ever since I started working at StoryCorps, that I've really plunged really deep back into my Chinese identity, really trying to scramble to pick up all of these pieces that I thought I had lost for a really long time. But here we are now. So I'm really excited for this partnership between Think Chinatown and with StoryCorps, because this is not only an opportunity for me to share my work professionally, but this presentation and all the work that I have been doing is really also a lot of my own personal identity work as well. And especially as an ABC, I'm trying to reclaim that as my identity. And so I would like to think that my parents would be really proud to see me up here today. And beyond my parents, I'd like to think that my younger self would also be really proud of me too. And this is not where my younger self would have ever imagined me today. And then I also am coming to you as one of the youngest presenters here at the conference today. And I'm really trying to show that we young folks, we young Asian Americans, are really trying to also reconnect with our roots. And we have some new ways of doing that, especially in our digital age. So I hope that this is a great way for us to not only bridge the gap between us and our immigrant parents, but also bridging a gap between the young and old within our communities too. So I wanted to start with a quick story about why I really started launching into this work at StoryCorps. So when I first moved here to New York, I was in a taxi cab, and my taxi driver turned to me and asked, "Where are you from?" And I said, "I was born and raised in San Francisco, but my parents are both from Hong Kong." And he turns around while he's still driving, and he says, "Nei gong gong dong wa? You speak Cantonese?" And I was like, "Yes, I do." And so that conversation flowed into him telling me about how his 12-year-old son didn't want to know anything about his Chinese side. He only wanted to speak English. He didn't want to learn how to speak Chinese. And he wanted to know how I knew how to speak Cantonese. And he was so excited that I could speak Cantonese. And he started asking me So do you think that my son is going to become like you, where he's going to want to learn about his Chinese side later, that he's going to want to speak Cantonese later? When do you think that'll happen? And I, in my very broken Cantonese, what I really wanted to tell him was, I really hope that he gets to that point. But a lot of Asian American kids go through this period of shame and denial of their Chinese side. And it really took me until I was 25 to figure this out. So I wanted to tell him all of this, but in my broken Cantonese, all I could do was say, I hope someday he does. And I wanted to tell him that. And so this work that I'm doing now is what I am hoping for his 12-year-old son, and then also kind of retroactively what I'm hoping for my younger self, and then also looking out for our future generations, our young and old Asian Americans wanting to reconnect with our roots, and hoping that we can see, in seeing the value of our stories and seeing of the all of the amazing work that we have done as Asian Americans in this country, how can you not be proud of being Asian American here? And so what I want to do today is really show that we are so much more than how we're seen and portrayed in the media, and our intricate stories and history really show that. So through our work, how can we continue to honor the legacy that our ancestors have left for us, and also continue to write stories for our future generations to come? All right, so before we begin, can I just get a show of hands, see who here has heard of StoryCorps before? Great, so good to hear. So for those of you who have never heard of StoryCorps before, at StoryCorps, our mission is to preserve and share humanity's stories in order to build connections between people and create a more just and compassionate world. So a lot of people know StoryCorps from our weekly NPR broadcast, but what you might not know is that all of those interviews, all of those 2.5-minute clips come from full 40-minute conversations between two people that know each other. So this could be a granddaughter interviewing her grandfather about childhood memories. It could be a couple coming in talking about the first time they've met, or it can be a father talking to his daughter about her future dreams. So we record hundreds of these conversations every year, and we archive them with the Library of Congress and also with our own StoryCorps archive so that future generations can listen to and learn from the stories of today. StoryCorps started in 2003 with our Grand Central Terminal booth. This was a soundproof recording booth right in the hustle and bustle of Grand Central Terminal. So for those of you who don't know, Grand Central Terminal is one of the busiest transit hubs in all of the country. And so you can imagine stepping into this very quiet, intimate booth and being able to have the chance to record a conversation with somebody that you care about and really sharing the stories and memories that were important to you in your life. We no longer have the booth here in Grand Central Terminal, but we do still continue to use the StoryCorps model all across the country. So we have a booth in Chicago and in Atlanta, and we also do have one in Foley Square right by Manhattan Chinatown in New York City. We also have an Airstream trailer that travels from state to state and stays in cities for 3 weeks at a time to record stories there. And then we also record at libraries, schools, museums, and other partner organizations as well. So before we get started, I thought that it would be a good way for you all to get to know StoryCorps is with one of my favorite interviews. This is a conversation between Kay Wang, who was 87 years old when she came in, with her son, Cheng Wang, and then her granddaughter, Chen Wang. And I have seen a lot of people at StoryCorps put this interview into their presentations before. But I felt like finally today is the perfect day for this animation to play, and you'll see why.
I wasn't very nice. If I make a mistake, my mother, she make me apologize. In our custom, when you apologize to your mother, you have to bring a cup of tea and say, I'm sorry. But I purposely dropped that hot cup of tea in my mother's lap. And I wasn't a good student. I always lie to get out of school because a lot of boyfriend after me. That time I was still young. I was not bad looking then. So what else? Hurry, hurry. I'm going to go home.
How'd you meet Grandpa?
I was a training nurse in a hospital. He was there for hemorrhoids operation. So when your grandpa see me, your grandpa keep on asking me to get married. And I said, I don't like you. You have bald head. I didn't like him because he's ugly. But one thing about your grandpa, he's very smart. That's it. No more questions.
Yeah.
Just a couple more questions?
Short one.
Short ones.
Short one. Tell me about working at Bloomingdale's. What did you do?
You know what I do. I'm not going to tell
you. No, you have to. You have to talk about it.
I am a detective. I got a very famous designer. I better not mention her name. She stole a dress, $3,000. So I walk out the store. I said, would you like to pay me that dress? She said, do you know who I am? I said, yeah, you are a thief. So that's my life.
Do you have any regrets?
No, what should I regret? No, I think I'm old enough to do whatever I would like. And that's it.
You know, there's a line between independent and stubborn, and my mom crossed that a lot.
She liked to complain about things, but she didn't really mind. Like, she took care of Grandpa, and she did a lot of that on her own. You knew because she complained about it, but she would do it, even though she complained.
Yeah. I don't know how willing she would have been to do StoryCorps if she actually didn't know she had so little time left. It was kind of like one of her last gifts to us. My mother was cremated, and the original plan was to put her in the same cremorial
next to Grandpa.
But she said, you know, keep me at your place for a while. So right now I have the ashes at home. And I talk to my mom every now and then. I'll tell her goodnight or I miss you or something like that. So I'm kind of happy she's with me.
All right. So I just wanted to give you all a little bit of a roadmap of what we're going to talk about today. So first, I'm going to talk a little bit about our StoryCorps model, how we collect oral history and do storytelling. Then we'll talk a little bit about the StoryCorps app and the online archive. And then we'll dive into the significance of the archive. And then we'll talk about how StoryCorps can really help with getting to know our family history and roots. And then we'll finally dive in into some best practices on how you can ask questions of your family members and loved ones. And then finally, what you can do next with us. And I'm going to ask that we all hold questions until the end because I also want to get you all to lunch. All right, so we'll start with the StoryCorps model. So our signature conversation style, like I was saying before, is a 40-minute conversation between two people that know each other. So unlike traditional oral history programs where an interviewer comes in and interviews somebody, we think that it's more efficient and also more meaningful when it's someone that you already know interviewing you because they have an idea of your history, they have an idea of who you are as a person, and then they can, and then you can use this conversation to get to know one another at a deeper level. The conversation is non-narrated, so the participants are the ones who come in with their own questions to ask each other and things that they want to talk about that were most important to them. The facilitator, which is my role, we act as a guide, taking care of the audio equipment to make sure that you get a beautiful recording, and then also to bear witness to these stories and relationships that blossom from each conversation. And then at the end, participants have the option of taking photographs, and this is kind of like putting a face to the voice when we archive these conversations. And the very special thing is also that we encourage people to also bring in items that would be very important to their stories. So that could be a photo, that could be a letter, that could be any document that you have found about your family members before, and then we can take a photo of that and then also archive it with your conversation. And then at the end, we have different kinds of release forms, which means we are able to archive it with different institutions. And so participants are able to decide which institutions they would like to archive it with. And StoryCorps does not have any expectations on which release form you choose. Because at its very core, this conversation and this experience is really for the two people that came in. So everybody that comes into the booth receives that recording. And so you can pass that on through your generations and share that with your friends and family. But we can also archive it for you at the Library of Congress in our archive if you wanted to put it other places too. So there are a lot of benefits to this StoryCorps model. The StoryCorps interview really affirms the value of the individual. It lets people know that they matter and that their stories matter and that they won't be forgotten. The simple act of sitting down for 40 minutes and sharing personal stories is a really powerful way to bring people together, to strengthen bonds, and to foster relationships between people. And the impact of the conversation doesn't end with just the conversation. So the participants themselves will be leaving with a better knowledge of their loved ones, but then also whoever listens to them later can also leave with that impact as well, learning more about their family history or anything, or just people that they don't know. They can learn about how other people are living and hopefully bring that with them for the rest of their lives. And in this way, StoryCorps interviews really have the potential to capture and preserve individual stories, but also, and more importantly, those rich relationships that really sustain our communities and speak to our broader humanity. StoryCorps at its heart is really about conversations. It's about sharing wisdom, it's about sharing gratitude, and also respect across generations. So what happens if people are not able to find their way to the StoryCorps booth? How can we make sure that StoryCorps is accessible to people and that we're able to put this tool into people's hands so that they can continue to record stories themselves and also preserve these connections, stories, and relationships? So glad you asked. So we launched in 2015, StoryCorps was awarded the TED Prize. And so with this, we launched the StoryCorps app for smartphones. And this was our way of taking StoryCorps out of the booth and putting them into people's hands. And our hope was really to expand our reach to then make the recording experience accessible for people and also to embed it into the lives of everyday people so that they can record stories for themselves and also within their communities. And since its launch in 2015, we've recorded over 153,000 interviews just on the app. So the app walks you through the process of recording an interview from start to finish. It provides questions and prompts. It keeps track of time and then also allows you to share and preserve your story with a click of a button. The app is linked to our online archive, and then also individuals can choose to archive it and share it with the Library of Congress as well. And we encourage all of you to download the app and record a story of your own. And just like our signature interviews, we really encourage you all to sit down with someone that you care about and talk about the things that are most important to you in your lives. So, like I said, the app is linked to our online archive so that individuals can really choose to share their story however they would like and to a larger online collection and also to the Library of Congress. Eventually, all of our interviews, both our signature and our app interviews, will be all on the same page. And so for our research folks, we also do keep track of keywords from each interview. So you can actually search any keyword that you are researching, and then all of the interviews that have to do with that will get pulled up, and then you can just dive in from there. All right, so this platform really also allows a number of tools for groups and community organizations to collect their own stories and also share their stories as well. And so you can create an account for your organization or start a community page where individuals from your community can start to record their own stories and then also put them into the community page as part of this project. Each story on the site can be embedded onto your website and shared through social media. And we have really been continuously inspired by the ways that communities have been able to be so creative and resourceful with this community page and really continue to record local histories, create community-centered programs, and even launch advocacy campaigns. So while I was searching the online archive, I came across this community page. So clearly, people are already starting to take their own histories, their histories into their own hands, and somebody has begun chronicling or recording the stories of the Kwan family, and this happened at a Kwan family reunion in Hawaii, but I was clearly not invited to it, so maybe next time I'll be part of it and be able to add to this community page too. All right, so what is so important? What's the big deal about this archive? I think a lot of times, especially for communities where they only really ever see news crews come in from outside of their communities when something bad happens, there may be some distrust on why people are coming in and wanting to record their stories because they don't know where the stories will go. They don't know who's going to be listening to the stories. They don't know who is going to be editing them to make it fit into a certain story arc. So why is it so important that we are in the archive? And I think one of the very important things is that a lot of times when we see our communities in the news, it's when something terrible happens. And so people only know us through these terrible things that happen to us. But where are our stories of joy? Where are stories of love, of success? And where are stories of just living and existing? So who here knows of any of the people that are pictured on this slide? Okay, follow-up question. Who here learned about these people in your history classes? That's what I thought. So our Asian American histories are not taught in school. If not all Asian American children go through their early lives without ever seeing themselves in U.S. history, other than maybe one paragraph about the Chinese Exclusion Act or one paragraph about the Japanese internment in World War II. This is obviously not because Asian Americans didn't exist in the U.S., but it just means that there are large chunks of history that are missing that we are not taught in schools. If only we were able to see our role models in our history books and in the media from a young age, how much respect would we have for our own ancestors and all of the people who came before us, who really paved the way for us here in the U.S.? So just so you all know, I want you all to get a little bit of this history too. So in a couple of our previous presentations, we talked about the Chinese railroad workers. So just last month marked the 150th anniversary of the completion of the Transcontinental Railroad. However, if you were to look at a photograph taken at right after the Golden Spike was driven in, you would not see a single Chinese worker in that photograph. These Chinese workers who risked their lives and lost their lives were completely erased from history. This here is Helen Zia. She is a Chinese American writer, journalist, and activist. She wrote the book Asian American Dreams, The Emergence of an American People, chronicling the long history of Asian Americans in this country and making it very clear that we have always been a part of this country. We've always called this place home, and we have always considered ourselves Americans. This here is Dorothy Toy and Paul Wing, who make up the iconic dance duo Toy and Wing. They were the first Asian Americans to ever dance on Broadway and were part of a booming Chinatown nightclub scene in San Francisco throughout the 50s and 60s. This here is Grace Lee Boggs, a Chinese American author, activist, and philosopher who organized alongside the Civil Rights Movement and the Black Power movements with a deep commitment to community. This here is Vincent Chin, and a Chinese-American man whose murder in Detroit in 1982 for being mistaken as Japanese, and then the lack of justice served afterwards brought Asian-Americans together across ethnic lines to form multi-ethnic, multi-racial alliances to organize for civil rights and to advocate for change against anti-Asian bias. And then finally, here, a personal role model for me, this is Michelle Kwan, a 2-time Olympic medalist, 5-time world champion, and 9-time U.S. champion figure skater. She was the first Asian woman I ever saw on TV achieving her dreams. And she became so much of a role model for me that my mother wanted me, Rochelle Kwan, to be Michelle Kwan. So she signed me up for ice skating lessons. Spoiler alert, I am not an Olympic ice skater, but I'd like to think that I'm still making my parents proud in a way, but just not on the ice. All right, so all of us here already kind of have an idea of why it's so important to dig into our family history and family roots. So really, to kick things off, this first clip features Danielle Lam, who brought her father, Alfred Lam, and her guma, her aunt, Lily Liu, into the San Francisco story booth to, quote, document their Lam family history.
Dad, same question. Can you just give us a snapshot of what our life is like right now?
I think your life right now, it's among the average Americans. But the most of the average Americans was started out as an average American, and they have a way head start. But the life that you have right now, we have to go through a lot of struggle to get to get to where you're at right now. So, like Guma said a little earlier, said, you know, just hoping that, you know, in the future generation, your future generation, I hope that you can teach them and let them know to remember where they come from. That things may seem coming to them easy, but it was not always easy.
Is there any memory that you want to recap or advice that you want to give our future family generations?
One of the reasons that I agreed to do this recording session is because, the family roots and history is very, very important. And as you can remember, you and your brother, I always, you know, remind you that, you know, you have a lot of friends, and you're going to probably make a lot of new friends. So family is important for future generations.
Okay, so I think that recording got cut off a little bit. But so if you were able to hear it, this was really a clip where Danielle Lam, who at the time was 25 years old, so like me, came in and wanted to learn about how she got to the place that she is, where they're at today. So the question that she first asked was, can you give us a snapshot of what our life is like now? And to me, that is not only a question about what our life is like now, but how did we get here? How did we get to the point that we are at now in our lives? And I'd like to think that StoryCorps is a really great way for us to be able to bring our families in and have these conversations with each other. So behind all of the official documents and narratives that we hear, we always have to remember that our histories are personal stories. So often our stories come trickling out in our day-to-day life outside of an official interview. So whether that is when we're eating together, when we're cooking together, or hanging up laundry together, not only do we get the chance to listen to stories with our loved ones, but we also get a chance to write stories together. Our role models can be the family members and loved ones who built this life for us in the U.S. And in listening to their stories and weaving them into our own stories today, we are honoring our ancestors and all they've done for us to get us to where we are today. In addition to honoring our own ancestors, we also have to remember that we ourselves are ancestors to come. So how do we tell these stories and also continue and tell our own stories to future generations to come? All of this is about far more than just stories. In the sharing and listening of stories, we are building relationships with our families, with our communities, and not only with the ones who are alive today, but also with the past and with those to come. So really, we're building relationships across time. So a personal story for me, this is a photo of my family in 1997. I was 4 years old at this time. When I was growing up, I saw this photograph in every single household on my dad's side. And to anyone else, this can look just like a normal, regular family portrait. But in this photograph, this is the first time in the history of time that my dad and all six of his siblings and his two parents were all in the same room together. My dad, who is the youngest of seven, is 34 years old in this photograph. And at the age of 15, right after meeting his oldest brother for the very first time in Huiping, he was the first to move here to the U.S. from Hong Kong and began the very long process of gradually bringing his family over. Separated by the Communist Revolution, his family spanned across Huiping, Hong Kong, and now San Francisco. And almost 20 years after arriving here in the U.S., this photo finally happened for the very first time. And look at how happy he is. And this is something that I just learned 3 months ago when I was 25. But now I understand why all my life he was always emphasizing we always have to think about family first, family first, family first. And if only I had known that when I was younger, how much more time and care I would have put into the family relationships that they worked so hard to build for us here. So this next clip between Geraldine and Nico is another conversation that comes from our San Francisco story booth. This clip really talks about some of the difficulties that I'm sure many of us experience when trying to talk to our older relatives and loved ones, especially when there's a language barrier between us.
The way that I communicated with, like, my grandparents and stuff like that, how my paternal grandfather didn't speak English. He only spoke Ilocano. And at the time when I was growing up, I didn't speak English either. I only spoke Spanish. And so we would bond over, like, taking care of the chickens in the backyard without really having to, like, communicate more than that, you know. And that's, like, a very singular experience that I think a lot of people, when I explain it to them, don't really understand. They're like, how did you communicate? And it's like, I didn't have to. We understood each other.
Yeah, I'm always kind of curious about what it would be like to have grandparents that speak English for me. I could communicate with my grandparents, could understand them, and we could sit down and sort of have like a pretty basic conversation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like we never really had like deep conversations, you know, it was more like, at least with my grandparents, it felt like really good company. And so, and that always seemed normal to me. So when people talk about this other relationship that they have with their grandparents, I'm like, what?
Yeah, a lot of, like, recently I've been talking to, like, a lot of my friends who are like, oh, yeah, I can trace my entire, like, family lineage because my grandparents told me this. And it's like, my grandparents never told me that because we didn't have the words to communicate that to each other, you know? And I had to figure this out on my own, like, outside of that. Like, I just recently found out where my, like, grandmother was from because it never came up. And we didn't have, like, there was no space when we were, like, trying to communicate to each other, like, basic things to talk about, like, our own, like, personal histories.
I just found out that my mom was born from a midwife or with the help of a midwife.
Really?
Yes. And of course that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, that totally makes sense. She's like, oh, yeah. I mean, all of us were. They were all delivered by the same midwife. And of course that makes total sense. But to me, it's like a piece of knowledge. For her, it's not really a piece of knowledge. It's like normal.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's also like part of it is that it never came up because it wasn't like thought of as like interesting.
I mean, it's not like my mom's not sharing this knowledge because, you know, she's like withholding it. She just doesn't think it's interesting to, you know, because it's so normal for her. So how do we like get that knowledge?
So the reason why I like started looking up like my personal like family history is because one of my friends in high school was like, oh, I can trace my family like all the way back to like pilgrims or whatever.
Right.
And so I like started asking him, and my parents didn't know. That stuff isn't written down. especially for like non-white communities, I think. We have no record of it. And so for me, when I started looking stuff up, I was able to find like some records, but like really I had to like ask people, and even the records were like not completely like giving the whole story. And so it was better for me to ask people rather than just looking at the papers. Like, for example, I was asking one of my aunts, oh, like, what do you know about Grandpa? Like, this thing says that he moved when he was like 18 years old. Like, what's up with that? And she's like, oh no, he's lying. He lied. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what do you mean he lied? And she's like, he was like 15 when he immigrated, you know? And I was like, whoa, okay, this is completely different than like the information that's here on the paper. Mm-hmm. But he had to say he was 18 because otherwise they're not going to let him, you know? And so knowing the stories behind like what the actual record is, it kind of showed me that like I don't necessarily have to have like a paper proof of like where my family came from and that kind of thing. We just have to remember to like keep talking about it so that we don't forget.
All right. So now we'll dive into some ways that you can talk with your family members. What are some best practices that we use at StoryCorps that you can use with your own loved ones? So first, ask meaningful questions. But how do we do that? So one of the ways to do that is to ask open-ended questions. So this doesn't assume any answers. This allows for people to answer beyond one word. So just not just a yes or no question, but really allows people to tell the story from opening up a question, like, tell me about the time that blah, blah, blah. You can build up to more reflective questions. So it can be helpful to start with some general questions about a person's life before shifting into a more reflective and specific questions. And always at the end, always offer a thank you to the people who are sharing stories with you, because you don't know how much it has taken for someone to be able to share a story with you. They may have dug into the past that they maybe didn't want to talk about. So always being thankful that they were sharing the story and also sharing their time with you. Use silence and patience. So keep in mind that it might take a while for your interview partner to process a question, come up with an answer, or even just warm up to the interview in general. So don't follow up with a question too quickly. Moments of silence sometimes allow for people to open up and say more. Remember to ask follow-up questions. If you're curious about something, ask follow-up questions. Sometimes the best stories are the ones that you aren't even preparing to ask. If your partner goes off topic, go along with it. You can redirect them to your original question later. And then ask both fact and feeling-based questions. So fact-based questions deal with the specific details or instances of a time, such as tell me about a time or give me an example of. And these questions help to describe the character and the scene of the story. These fact-based questions are really helpful if your interview partner is leaving out a part of something that may be important to the story, or you just kind of want to build a whole scene around the story that they're telling. And then feeling-based questions are talking about the consequences of something happening. So how did you feel? What did you learn? And the answers to these questions can often lead to a shift in the story, which helps to make the interview a meaningful one for the both of you. And finally, follow your curiosity and never stop learning. You never know where this can take you. So this next interview is going to highlight some of these best practices and also some that you may want to rethink in terms of how to ask questions. This is another interview from the San Francisco Story Booth. And this is, again, an interview that features three generations in one room. So Gregory Fury, who is a fifth-generation San Franciscan, has done extensive genealogical research into his family's roots in San Francisco. So he brought his mother, Estelle H. Kelly, in to tell the stories behind the documents, and also brought his daughter, Noelle, to hear some of these stories with him.
So tell us how you got from the village back to the United States.
Well, my grandfather just told us one day that my mother and my father was getting divorced, and I was getting a new mother, and that we had to go back to America because we were citizens of America, and the war was getting pretty bad, the war with the Japanese. So he thought it would be safer for us to go back to America.
Okay. Do you remember what you were thinking when he told you that?
No, because I was only 8 and a half, and it didn't dawn on me that, you know, it would be an adventure, or it's just something I had to do.
Did you have to get on some kind of a ship to get here?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember the name of the ship?
Yeah, Roosevelt.
Okay. And where did you catch the ship?
In Hong Kong.
All right. How far away from your village was Hong Kong?
I can't remember.
Do you remember how long it took to get there?
No.
Okay. So when you got on this ship, the Roosevelt, who was with you?
Just my sister and I. And we had a male friend that was supposed to be our uncle.
Did you know him?
No.
How long did the voyage last?
I think it lasted at least 21 days.
And this is your sister, Eleanor?
Yes.
Okay. So what did you guys do for 21 days?
Well, I just wandered around the ship by myself. And my sister was sick most of the time, so she just kind of stayed in the cabin.
Oh. How did you find the food on board the ship?
I don't remember. I just know that I smelled food, and I just went to where I was supposed to go and start eating. I don't remember.
Did any of the food seem familiar to you?
No. I think we had mush one day, and I thought that was terrible.
Okay. Was there any Chinese food on board ship?
Not that I remember.
Before getting on board this ship, had you ever had Western food?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't remember.
As you had listened to the clip, think about in what ways did Gregory support and guide his mother throughout the conversation? What questions elicited meaningful responses? If you could, would you change any of these questions in the conversation? And what elements of the recording stood out to you? So like we were saying before, this presentation will be in the folder for everybody to check out, so you can re-listen to the clip and think about these questions. All right, so many of these questions and best practices are really geared to elicit meaningful stories that can be shared with families, friends, and generations to come. So at StoryCorps, we think there are four main elements that, when combined together, can make especially powerful and compelling stories. So one, details. Really set the scene of the story. Let the listeners know the story, where the story is taking place, and provide imagery and details that stay with listeners long after they've heard the story. Two, a narrative arc. What informed the experience? What happened because of the experience? Three, characters. Great stories provide a portrait of an individual, and this could be a storyteller or someone they talk about in the story. And ask yourself, do you get an idea of who the storyteller is and their personality? And then finally, an emotional connection. Because at its very basic, storytelling is a means to connect with another person and to step into their shoes. So does this story help you to better understand another person and their experience? And then this last clip that I have for us is a great example that touches upon a lot of these great elements of a story. So I'm bringing back Alfred Lamb with a story that still gives me chills every time I listen to it, and a very clear picture of where he was.
Dad, can you explain what it was like seeing Ye Ye for the first time in many years?
Ye Ye did not come out to United States until I was 21 years old. So I haven't seen him for half of my life. Even my whole life, I probably see him about 2 weeks every year during the Chinese holidays. I was happy to see him because he was my father. My memories of Ye Ye is very, very, very few and far between. So I don't have any, like, father and son baseball game memories and, a Sunday in the park kind of memories. And I just have memories of when he comes to the train station, where we visit China from Hong Kong, come to the train station and pick me up in an old yellow school bus. And the school bus that they, because of a communist country, the school bus they have, they have to use a manual cranking system where you crank start the engine from the front of the car. And I was able to help. He asked me to help him to crank, and then once the engine got started, I thought that was the biggest achievement. And I was 7 years old. And then after we crank, he says, "Okay, for helping me, let me get you a popsicle," and from a Fender. And that popsicle was like the best ice cream ever. And that was those are the memories I have of him. And you know, driving back home and you know, going through the dirt road and stuff, and he let me steer the bus. I sit on his lap and steering a big school bus down the dirt road, and that's like those are the memories that I have. But you know, I was really happy to see him, you know, and we see and really happy that a family as a whole.
All right, so what can you do next? So first, you can go and download the free mobile app for your phone, and you can start recording the moment that you get home today or at your next family gathering, no matter how big or small, and start thinking about who you want to not only interview, but also build a relationship with through these storytelling. And also, a very special opportunity for you all. Think Chinatown and StoryCorps are partnering together to bring the recording experience to you all. We will be opening up our Lower Manhattan Story Booth in Foley Square, close to Manhattan Chinatown, for 10 to 12 recordings. Today and tomorrow, I'll be set up in the table in the back to answer any questions about StoryCorps, and also to get your contact information if you are interested in bringing someone into the recording booth. And we are also planning on hosting a listening event afterwards as well, so that folks can have a chance to listen to these recordings all together and hear the stories from their communities. So for now, keep Saturday, June 22nd and Sunday, June 23rd open, and hopefully I'll see you in the booth.
Okay, I think we're out of time now.
All right.